Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Wake Up to Purpose with your host, John Stanko. This program will help you find your purpose and, more importantly, how to make your purpose work for you. And now, here's John Stanko.
Hello out there in internet land. Yes, this is John Stanko and the purpose master, the purpose doctor, the purpose person coming to you again on Blog Radio. Hope you are doing well today, whenever the day is for you. We are recording on Friday, April 24th, but you may listen at another time. And I am glad you are listening no matter when it is. And so yesterday we had a great show with Felicia Lynch, and I woke up this morning. I always check the numbers when I get up. It's kind of a ritual, and they were really strong for a number of people who are listened, and so I'm grateful for that. And this is wrapping up my fourth week of being back on Blog Radio, and it's been a great experience. You know, next week, I was thinking, maybe I'll cut back to just a couple of days a week. But we've already got 4 days lined up for next week, and a strong possibility for the fifth. But Monday, we're going to hear from Kim McCarthy. Kim volunteers for Samaritan's Purse, and she just got back from Italy. She finishes up her quarantine on Tuesday, so I thought it would be really interesting to talk to Kim about what she experienced there. She's also been to the Congo to volunteer in a Samaritan's Purse hospital that's dealing with Ebola. So you don't want to miss Monday. And then Tuesday, Dr. Rhonda Johnson, who works for Allegheny Health Network. And Dr. Rhonda has been videoing, putting videos on Facebook daily, kind of sharing her perspective on the crisis and what we should be doing. She also went to Kenya with me in February and will have a lot of things to say about that. Wednesday will be Charlene Dominic. Charlene has written 3 booklets through Urban Press that we're about to put into one book, and she's got a ministry launch that's coming up in May, and we want to talk to her about that. Then my friend Doug Sprague on Thursday will be a guest. He's written the book Go, about his experience of going to be in Gabon, Central Africa, to work at the Bongolo Hospital as a, I don't want to say maintenance, but he was working in physical plant and taking care of buildings and what have you. And so he wrote a really fascinating book about the journey up to the journey, and then while he was there, and then the journey coming home. And he was going to be on Monday, but you know, he had to cancel because he has something like his first wedding anniversary, and so he asked if he could have another day. And I said, all right, if we have to. And so that's the lineup for next week. But before we get to next week, we have today. And in a few minutes, I'm going to bring on my cohort, my colleague, my partner in crime, Bill Rhodes, and we're going to talk a little bit about purpose. And if you'd like to call in and ask any questions, most people do not listen to this live. They listen to it by download, or they'll listen to it later. But if you can call in and you'd like to ask a question, the number is 515-605-9729, 515-605-9729. And if you didn't jot that down, just go to the page that describes this show, and it'll have the guest call-in number there. Feel free to call us, and we will answer your questions. Behave. If you want to make editorial statements, you can start your own show. This is for questions, and so I welcome questions. And we'll do this regularly to give people a chance to make sure we're clear and we're talking about things that are important to people and that we're getting the message across. I downloaded this morning the Africa registered a 43% jump in reported COVID-19 cases in the last week, highlighting a warning from the World Health Organization that the continent of 1.3 billion could become the next epicenter of the global outbreak. Skipping down, it says in the 2 months since the continent began mobilizing to fight the outbreak, less than 500,000 tests have been conducted on the population of more than 1 billion. That's just 325 people tested per 1 million people. By comparison, that's far lower than Italy, one of the world's worst hit countries. And this doctor said, if you don't test, you don't find. And if you don't test, you are blinded. If you don't test, you are not not ahead of the curve. African governments reported a total of nearly 26,000 cases as of Thursday, according to the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, up from just over 16,000 a week ago. So that's an increase of 10,000. Around 1,200 people have died, although those figures are still relatively small. In the global picture, the sharp increase in cases is a cause for concern. The previous week saw an increase of 29%. And that's been my sense, that that they're just not aware of where it is. And it's almost impossible to quarantine. It's almost impossible to social distance and shelter in place and for a lot of reasons, and I won't go into them. But our prayers are with our African brothers and sisters. And of course, I have a lot of partners in Kenya that I'm staying in touch with, and we are raising money for them. If you would like to give, you can get in touch with me, and everything we get goes to the orphans and the partners that we work with in Kenya. But, you know, it's going to come down to not even money. It's going to come down to can they get food? What's the food supply going to look like? Because they shop every day. And they don't have freezers. They don't stock up their refrigerators. And so it's obviously a concern, a point of prayer. And so pray with us and trust with us that God will protect the people of the continent, and especially the family of God. Let's go ahead and get into our custom of Psalm 91, and we're going to read today from something called the Young's Translation. And Young's literal translation is a translation of the Bible into English published in 1862. The translation was made by Robert Young, compiler of Young's Concordance to the Bible and Concise Critical Comments on the New Testament. Now, this explanation goes in to describe what texts Mr. Young used to make the transition, and there's a publisher's note to the third edition. This work has been subjected to a fresh revision, making no alteration on the principles on which the translation proceeds, but endeavoring to make it as nearly perfect in point of accuracy on its present lines as possible. And this raises really interesting issues about Bible translation, that it's almost impossible to do word for word. People say, I want a literal translation. It's not possible. Because language has changed in 2,000 or 3,000 years. And I've experienced this when I go to Kenya or another country, and I am using an interpreter. Sometimes I will say something, and it may take 8 seconds. It may take the interpreter 12 or 15 seconds to explain it, because my words don't exactly fit his words, so he has to explain the concept. He has to make a decision about how he is going to interpret and translate what I've just said. And that's what our Bible translators have had to go through, and that's why we have so many translations. And, you know, and people get uptight, and, you know, there should only be one, and then this one's the best one. And I think there may be some that are better than others. Some do endeavor to stick as close as they can to word, do a paraphrase or do an interpretation. And that's, I don't think that's necessarily wrong. Anyway, let's read Young's literal translation of Psalm 91. He who is dwelling in the secret place of the Most High, in the shade of the Mighty, lodgeth habitually. He is saying of Jehovah, my refuge and my bulwark, my God, I trust in him. For he delivereth thee from the snare of a fowler, from a calamitous pestilence. With his pinion he covereth thee over, and under his wings thou dost trust. A shield and buckler is his truth. Thou art not afraid of fear by night, of arrow that flieth by day, of pestilence in thick darkness that walketh, of destruction that destroyeth at noon. There fall at thy side 1,000, and a myriad at thy right hand. Unto thee it cometh not nigh. But with thine eyes thou lookest, and the reward of the wicked thou seest. For thou, O Jehovah, art my refuge. The Most High thou madest thy habitation. Evil happeneth not unto thee, and a plague cometh not near thy tent. For his messengers he chargeth for thee, to keep thee in all thy ways. On the hands they bear thee up, lest thou smite against the stone thy foot. On lion and asp thou treadest, thou trampest young lion and dragon. Because in me he hath delighted, I also deliver him. I set him on high, because he hath known my name. He doth call me, and I answer him. I am with him in distress. I deliver him and honor him. And with length of days I satisfy him, and I cause him to look on my salvation. You know, there's something to be said for the these and the thous. It makes it an elegant read, and that is Young's translation. But regardless of whether we use a contemporary English or old English, the issue is the promises in Psalm 91 are promises that we are standing on in these days. And I'm praying them over my friends in Kenya and Africa, that the same God who protects me here, us here, will protect them there. So, all right, enough of that. Let us bring on my colleague, my partner, Bill Rhodes. Bill, welcome back to Wake Up to Purpose.
Hey, John. Thank you for being on my show today. I really enjoy the fact that you've taken time out of your busy day. You know, you're a writing machine, and I just want to thank you for being my guest today.
It's the least I could do. It's the least I could do. I mean, to help a brother out. And so,
you know,
how are you faring during these pandemic days?
If you hear a crinkling, it's because of my shirt, John. It's I've not bathed in a while here, and no need to go out. So the same clothes are just getting a bit stiff.
Yeah. It's and this is why we do radio, and so it doesn't really matter. I love it. Sometimes you'll write me at 4 in the afternoon and say, I'm going to put my day pajamas on now. That's so true. I have found out I can now survive with 2 pair of pants, 4 shirts, and a pair of slippers. That's all I need.
Yeah. Well, I've got 2 pair of slippers, one for daytime, one for nighttime, because my feet sweat, so they get a bit stinky, and they need to get set out on the back porch for a while. So,
all right. Well, this is too much information. So, what do you want to talk about today? You know, as I've said to our listeners in the past, you are you know my material, you know my work better than I do. So, where do you want to go today? What would you like to talk about?
Well, I think that since you called into my show, I think I'm going to talk about me here for a minute. You know, being one-handed from the motorcycle accident and not being able to use my arm. I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis here a number of years ago, and it affects my left hand, my good hand. So had a real bad episode, and my hand swelled up. So I was down to my pinky and my thumb being able to use.
Wow.
So that certainly prompted a whole lot of fear going into the doctor's office. So, you know, I think that is a premise. I can't get a lot of the treatments that I get normally because of my health issues, because of the whole pandemic and hospital facilities being shut down. So I know there's a lot of fear out there, and I know that you've dealt with, and you've talked about that a number of times on your different shows.
Mm-hmm.
And written about it, but just talk to me throw out for me a couple of your fears, and I want to talk. You know, we have BC and AD as far as our timeline is in our history is concerned, and I think that AD is going to be equal to BV before the virus, and then we'll have AV as after the virus. But talk to me before all this happened. What was your greatest fear? What was it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's let me just go back and say my I was steeped in fear. I was raised in fear. I mean, that was the prevailing weakness of my family. My father was one of the most gifted guys I knew, but he never did anything because he was afraid. My mother never learned to drive because she was convinced that cars just flew off bridges into the water below. And she was not alone in her family. So, you know, it took me a while, first of all, to realize that I came out of that. I was raised in that, and so as we never went anywhere, we never traveled as a family, we never partied much together, and I don't mean party in a bad sense. It was just my folks were hardworking people. They saved as much as they could because they were fearful of the future, and so. You know, that's almost my genetic code, and so I never saw that because I was raised in it, and so fear of poverty was very big for me. I was the only one and the first one in much of my family on either side, mother or dad, to go to college, and I felt like education was going to save me, so to speak. Education was going to protect me, and hard work was going to protect me, because there was a really big fear of poverty, and so I was driven to do what I could do to protect myself from that. And then I met the Lord and realized that, you know, I started to see some of that history and some of how it had impacted me. And, you know, and I knew all the Bible verses, I'm free and free at last, and thank God, you know, and God has not given us a spirit of fear. But you know, it was, Bill, for 20 plus years I held in my heart what I felt like God wanted me to do. And I wouldn't share it because I was afraid I was going to be perceived as a non-team player. It was going to be ego. I had my own agenda. And that's in part why for 11 years I was an associate pastor and I only spoke twice. I knew I was supposed to speak more. But I was going to wait on the Lord. I didn't want to raise it with anybody because I was, whether it was fear of rejection or just fear of how I was going to be perceived. And so I had to face that issue, and that led me 20 years ago to my starting over in life with my ministry and the work that God had given me to do. And then I had to, then I really got into just facing how fearful I was of, again, back to poverty. I was going to fail. I wasn't going to make any money. I wasn't going to find my way. And it got down to my fear of my creativity. I mean, when I started over, I had to be creative. And I had to start a company. I had to raise money. I had to, for my for-profit company, I had to find business and clients. And man, I was just all bound up in fear. And when I started writing in 2001, the Monday Memo, and then shortly thereafter, I did. I started to do a weekly Bible study. I would write like a devotional on four verses a day, and once a week I would send out those 7 days worth of what I had written. And Bill, I was so bound up that what I determined to do was I was going to write those Bible studies and I was not going to edit them. Because I was so into, it's not good enough, I'm not ready, it's not ready for prime time. I forced myself to send them out as is, and I wouldn't say painful experience. It was just, you know, I'm doing this, and then, you know, maybe a week later I'd look at it. Oh, look at this. Oh, look at that. I could have written that better, but you know, over the 9 years that I did it, I never had anybody write me about a typo, but I had many people write me how many. Or how much the Bible studies meant to them, how they used them. And so God was delivering me from this morbid sense of everything had to be just right before I could put it out. So I guess, you know, my fear of mistakes or being seen as shallow or stupid or and it's even funny, Bill, this week, the biggest show I've had while I was interviewing the person, I'm looking at the page on Blog Talk Radio, and I misspelled two words in the title. Two words.
Hmm?
And, you know, this person had sent out the links, and I had put out the links. Now, my point is that maybe some people saw those, but that's the biggest show I've had this week, that it didn't matter, that it wasn't important. What was important was to deliver that person's story to the public. And so I'm still, you know, my book, Changing the Way We Do Church, I am hesitant to write that because I know it's not going to be received well by current leadership in the church, and I keep putting it off. I make this phone call. I write this thank you. I'll help this person with this book. Oh, I've got all my essays on leadership, so I'll put those together. That's a little easier. It's going to get out. No, I'm terrified. I am fearful that it's not going to turn out the way I want, and I am fearful that it's not going to be received. Now, I've done 50-plus books, and so
that's
but
just
I,
your
I,
own, right?
Yeah, that's 50 of my own, plus, you know, another 50 or 60, maybe more for other people, but I still have to fight it. And so it's you know, it's and that's why I'm so passionate to continue to write or to talk about fear, to encourage people to face it, because, you know, there are a lot of secular authors, not so much church authors, but secular authors who have really helped me. Seth Godin and Steve Pressman and Daniel Pink and others that talk about fear and there's a Eric Mizell who has some fantastic stuff on fear and creativity and the point they all make is that the fear is rational. It's reasonable. You know, I can't go on a missions trip until my children are grown. That's a fear statement. Now, we don't see it. It sounds so rational. But what we're saying is I'm afraid I can't go. Because if I go, you know, the kids are going to fall down the steps, or people are going to think I'm a bad mom or I'm a bad dad. And so I don't have time to write. No, it's a fear statement. I'm afraid I don't have time to do it the way I would want it done. And if I put it out there, people are going to think I'm stupid. People are going to think I'm an idiot. Therefore, I shorten all that into saying, I don't have time. And so I'm facing those statements and those excuses and those things that I've done in my own way that are masking the fear. And it could come off, you know, bravado. And then as Christians, we have a whole nother line of fears. You know, we're afraid of getting ahead of the Lord. We don't say that. We say, I don't want to get ahead of the Lord. I'm waiting on God's perfect timing. I'm afraid I'm going to step out in the wrong time. So it's fear, fear, fear. And I'll say this last thing that I liken it to eating garlic. You know, if everybody in a family has eaten garlic, nobody can smell the garlic. And it's not until someone comes in who hasn't eaten the garlic says, ooh, boy, this house smells. What have you all been eating? But we can't smell it, and that's how fear is. We all smell of the garlic, and therefore we can't smell it on one another. It's not until someone starts to get free from the garlic of fear that they can recognize it, and they can help other people recognize it. But of course, people are then afraid. You know, you're telling me I'm afraid, so therefore I'm afraid I'm a bad Christian. I'm afraid that I should be further along than I am. I feel like I'm somebody who's come out of some measure of fear, trying to call back to people who are still in fear, but they're afraid to listen to me. So, anyway, that's kind of part of my journey with fear.
But what about I know that whenever you took your garbage cans out in your other house, walking through and running into the spider web. Oh, wait, was that me? That was you, I think. Go ahead, tell us about
that. Yeah, you just have so absorbed my stories that they've taken
right.
on an identity
yeah.
of your own. Yeah, we were the
yeah.
story is we were in Orlando, and as most municipalities, we had to take our trash out to the curb every week, and so we kept ours out. We had a little alcove right outside our front door to the right, and it was pretty deep, and so we kept our cans in there, and they were hidden and covered, and you couldn't really see them, and so one morning I went out, and I guess it had been a while since I had taken the trash out because my wife is a foot shorter than I am, so she would go out, but she missed this spider web that was about 6 feet off the ground. But this morning I went out, I hit that spider web just right. And it got in my hair. I mean, it was substantial. And, you know, I could hear this little spider singing, "This is the day that the Lord has made." I mean, he thought he was going to eat, like a king for the rest of his life. So anyway, I mean, it was in my hair. So I took the trash cans out. I put them on the curb. I came into the hall bathroom and looked in the mirror. And I felt the Lord speak to me. And he said, that's how fear is. It you walk into it head high, it wraps itself around your mind, and then you have a choice to make. And then my choice that morning in the bathroom was I going to take the spider web out of my hair, or was I going to choose to comb it into my hair to make it look like it was supposed to be there? And of course that's silly, you know. So I got it out. But that's what we have to do. We have to actively work to identify the fear, bring it to light, and allow the light to cleanse it and to bathe it. I don't think the light necessarily makes it go away, but we can face it for what it is. Oh, I just don't have high standards. No, I'm terrified that people are going to think I'm stupid. So that's the fear. So if I can battle with it, I can dialogue with it because I recognize it for what it is and who it is, and I can say every week I'm going to send these Bible studies out and I am not going to proof them because there's a more important issue here than my persona, than how I want people to perceive me. The important thing is here that I put the emphasis on getting this material to people who can use it and will benefit from it.
Wow. That's good stuff, John. You're listening. Our call-in number is 515-605-9729. Right now we're talking with John Stanko and Bill Rhodes on Bill Rhodes' program. The number again to
Bill
call
Rhodes
in
Friday.
If you want to talk about fear is 515-605-9729. You know, one of the things that dealing with, you know, the fears all down through my life, and I'm sure that there's, you know, that this is pretty common. We get that conversation going on in our head. What if? You know, I mean, what if it doesn't, what if, like you said, what if it's not good enough? What if there's a mistake? You know, what if this is going to offend somebody? What if this doesn't offend somebody? You know, what if, and I think that sometimes we find that we end up that our fear reminds us of something or we see this association, this comparison with someplace where our fears were recognized or our fears were identified in real life back in our past. You know, I mean, you know, your fear of the poverty thing. Well, because you were poor growing up, you know,
the fear
for me of being one-handed, of being no-handed, you know, because, you know, I knew what it was like and at some extent.
Yeah.
And then we have a tendency to magnify that, you know, and make it so much bigger. You know, whenever I was, many years ago, back in our Methodist days, the charismatics, so, you know, magnify the Lord with me, you know, and whenever I think about that, I had this revelation one time, or God told me this, or the Holy Spirit reminded, or like you say, you know, this thought came through my head about that phrase, magnify the Lord with me. And, you know, we can think of that in two different ways. We can think of it as, you know, standing on the corner with a big cheerleader horn, you know, blasting and making the sound bigger. But also, you know, whenever you think about it, you can look through a magnifying glass. And I think that that's what we need to do both ways. We need to examine, you know, closely, magnify the Lord with me, examine closely how God has showed up in our past, and know that he's a man of patterns. You know, he does, a lot of times he does the same thing in different ways, which is sort of a unique perspective. But then we also have to make sure that we tell others about it, because, I mean, looking at you, as long as I've known you, man, I would never think that you were afraid of anything, you know? I mean, seriously. You know, you're the never let them see you sweat. You know, I mean, there's been times I know that that you've had issues to be concerned about. You know, but you know, I think of the tell us the story about whenever you were doing the conference and the mailers didn't go out.
Oh gosh,
how that.
Yeah, we did a conference. I was with Integrity Music, and we did a conference in Dallas, Texas, and we sent out like 50,000 flyers to our mailing list, and the majority of them never got there. And it was just – and I've always said a bad conference is like flushing a toilet. Once you flush a toilet, you can't reverse it. And a bad conference just the same way. It just – once it goes bad, everything goes bad. And we lost so much money. I mean, the sound system went out. The projection system went out. Our product that we sent there to sell got lost. I mean, it was just one thing after another. And so that was in November, and it was so painful. And we didn't have another conference until January. And I just was petrified. I just thought, it's over. What if this happens again? You know, but we just, again, we faced our fear. We went in and we looked at everything we were doing and why things went so wrong. And I remember going, that was Dallas in November. We went to San Diego at the end of January. We had almost 3 months, and it was one of the best conferences we had ever had. But we had to face our fear. I had to face the fear that it was over. I had to face the fear that I had done a bad job. I had to face the fear. And people were trying to make me feel better, you know. We had another bad conference in San Francisco one time, and people said to me, you know, well, if one person was helped, Dr. Stanko, it was all worth it. And I took everybody to dinner that night, and I said, that's true. But if we could have helped 100 people and we only helped one, then that was just bad execution. And I just don't want to live through this again. And so all of our failures really turned into great successes. And, Bill, I thought you raised a good point earlier about past experiences. You know, somebody can go through a painful relationship, a breakup. You know, and they meet somebody who they really like, but they're reacting not to the new person, but the fear that they have that it's going to happen again or it's going to be repeated. And so, therefore, they're making a decision on what's best for them today based on a fear that's connected with an experience in the past. And that's why, again, I am such an advocate and encouraging people not to slough that stuff off, but to deal with it, to dig down into it, to face the pain of it, and to get free from it, because fear is debilitating. It causes us to do the wrong things, and so it's very important to face it. And you know, and when you do have life failures, you have to audit those. You have to go through those. When I would do a conference, I would meet with our team after the conference. I said, okay, let's talk about everything we did right, real quick. And we'd say, you know, the food was good. You know, we started on time. I thought the team we had was really good. We'd write all that down on a piece of paper, and we'd say, thank you, Lord. We'd pray over it. I'd say, now, what did we do that wasn't so good? And people would want to, and I said, no disputing it, because somebody would say, I think this could have been better. And somebody would say, oh, I don't know. I said, no. We've got to face the fact that there were things. We're not afraid. There were things that weren't that good, and we would do the same thing as with our successes. We would put them on a sheet of paper. We would thank the Lord. We would pray over them. We'd file them away until we were getting ready for the next event, and we'd pull them out to refresh ourselves of what we did good, what we thought we didn't do so good, and more often than not, we did better events than we had done the last time because we were willing to face both of those areas, the good and the not so good.
Yeah, one of the things that you mentioned earlier, that verse, you know, the perfect love casts out all fear. You know,
oh yeah.
So that we throw that out as, I don't know, sort of a Band-Aid blanket that's just going to cover over everything.
Mm.
You know, and the reason, you know, cast out fear, because what's it say? Fear has torment, you know, and that mm-hmm. torment is what, you know, that, you know, the rejection, and what if nobody likes me, and what if it's wrong,
mm-hmm.
and you know, the whole judgment and shame thing that is part of, mm-hmm. you know, you buy into the whole Adam and Eve, you know, taking the apple,
mm-hmm.
and you know, the fruit of the tree, and mm-hmm. you know, what was produced was shame. And,
yeah.
you know,
shame,
the shame and
fear.
And the rejection, and, you know, the fear, what if he finds me, you know, I'm naked, you know, cover me up, you know, I can't be this way. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, you've done, and I don't, you've not, it's been a while since you've done this, but, you know, we've certainly been preoccupied in, you know, in the virus thing here, but the whole thing that you did on celebrating a failure. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's been, you know, I've certainly had my failures. You know, I mean, I was I won't go into the details because it's way too embarrassing, but I opened my mouth in a conference in a meeting one time and just stood up and it was just really bad, but I was stupid. And a friend of mine, we're getting in the car on the way, and he's like, boy, you know, he said, you can really be insightful. And I like puffed my chest out. I was like, why, thank you, that's really great. He goes, no, wrong spelling. He said, the comment you made was like throwing gasoline on a fire. And, you know, he meant insightful in a different way. And
yeah, like inciting a riot, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. And that's
yeah.
pretty much
yeah.
what I did. But you know, the whole perspective of celebrating a failure, you know, I heard somebody the other day say that, you know, we have a tendency to learn more from our failures than we do from our successes, probably because
yep.
they bite so much.
Yeah. It's, well, you know, getting back to your verse you quoted out of 1 John, perfect love casts out fear. So therefore, fear is not that's not the problem. It's a love problem. You know, that we're afraid that God will be angry, or he's going to reject us, or, you know, that we're less than we should be. And so it bothered me when I went to bed last night when I found the mistakes that I had made in the blog radio explanations. And I actually had a dream where I felt the dream was trying to help me deal with it, that it wasn't the end of the world. Get over it. Move on to it. It hurt your persona, but in the long run, it's not a big deal. And yeah, the celebrate a failure, and we were talking about that the other day on Facebook Live, that, you know, we are always, failure is a learning experience. We often learn more from failure than we do from success. We are always to be learning. Therefore, should we not always be failing? But man, no, there's got to be a better way. And we even say, I'd rather learn from somebody else's failure. But no, even our failures, and I've added on when we fail on purpose, because we don't want to talk about getting married 5 times or having 4 bankruptcies. That's not, I've learned from every one of them. That's not what we're talking about. But, you
yeah.
know, in pursuing our purpose and expressing our creativity, when we paint, sometimes the blue is not going to be as blue as we should have had it. And the next time, we'll be able to do a better job. It wasn't a failure. It was just for us to learn from and to grow from. And growth is really the goal, not perfection. And so, but again, we can be afraid of that, and I can't pay the price to grow. And so, you know, I tell people when I coach them, Bill, and it's very difficult for them to latch onto, which probably means I need to tell them something else. But I say, when you're stuck, assume it's fear. Assume it's fear. Don't. Well, maybe I'm afraid. No, you're afraid. Go find, search and destroy. Go find out where it is. And I go, like, I pick up papers and my computer. Where is it? Where is it? Where is it? Where, what am I afraid of? Where? There it is. I knew there was something in there. See, if we approach it like that, it's less of a. Again, there's less shame. Because we're afraid to find what we're afraid of. So people anymore tell me, I can't find my purpose. I don't know what my purpose is. I said, what are you afraid of? They said, well, nothing. I said, no, what are you afraid of? See, they're afraid they're going to have to quit their job. They're afraid if they find it, they're going to have to fulfill it. They're afraid they're going to have to go to Africa. They're afraid, you know, they're going to, it's going to cost them money. So when they say, I don't know what my purpose is, if we get to the root of it, it's, I'm afraid it's inadequate. I'm afraid I'm inadequate. And so more and more, if I can help people find the fear, then it releases them to find their purpose. But it's a battle to get to that point because we've been grooved with it even from the pulpit. You know, we've heard well-meaning teachers say, go for it, but don't miss the Lord. I mean, you step out and do what God does, but just make sure it's the Lord. Well, that caveat stops people in their tracks. Ooh, you know, I'm afraid it isn't the Lord. I need another confirmation. Now's not the right time because I've been taught, you know, I had this, I almost posted this the other day that, you know, when soldiers go off to war in our cultures today, we honor them and we should. When they go off to serve their country, and they love their families, but they leave their families to serve. But when people do that for the kingdom, we say they're fanatics. Because, so they're afraid to serve the kingdom, because they don't, they're afraid that they will be perceived that they don't love or take care of their family. Now, you know, this goes to me, those years that I was in Africa, and people, I'd go for 4 months at a time, and people would say, what are you doing? You know, is everything okay at home? Or, you know, are you? And I was, I must be crazy. But God was, this was clearly what we were supposed to do. And then I thought, well, my dad went away to World War II. And when the soldiers left for World War II, there were no furloughs. You either came home wounded, you came home in a body bag, or you came home when the war was over. Those were your only three options. And I thought, if that's what my dad did for democracy or for the United States, what should I be willing to do for the kingdom? And so I had to face my fear. People would think I was crazy, and I am in many ways. They would think that my marriage was failing, which it was not. And I had to embrace that season. I wouldn't want to do it again, but I felt it was me going off to war for the kingdom, and we had to face a lot of, again, a lot of the financial fears of how am I going to work in Africa and make ends meet in the United States? But God was faithful and did it for us.
Yeah, that whole perspective. Yeah, it was a million-dollar experience. I wouldn't give you a plugged nickel to do it again. Yeah.
Indeed. It was great. I grew. I mean, God put me in exile. He had me in exile for 8 years, and I was on the backside of the earth where there was still dial-up modem internet, and there were days at a time I couldn't get on, weeks no electricity, days no water, and I had a lot of time to think, Bill. I had a lot of time to reflect on my my fears, some of those years where I allowed myself to just languish because I didn't want to be perceived as somebody that was egotistical, and then it also perfected my message. You know, I tested things on African audiences, and they responded so positively, and I learned what worked and what didn't work in a communication sense. And it was, again, it was that, like you said, it was a $1 million experience that I wouldn't give you 10 cents to go through again.
What do you think, we were talking earlier about the whole, you know, with the fear thing and the paralysis and, you know, the trauma. Do you think that that can become like an altar almost, something that we in some ways worship?
Yeah, it becomes our friend. I posted the other day, and it got a lot of traffic, is that God can't set us free from our enemies when they become our friends. You know, and I think that they become our shields. Hey, God, you know, I mean, I got these responsibilities right now. Don't ask me to try and do both of those things. You know, I'm just not in a good place right now. I see this. I hear it all the time in publishing. You know, people, they were going to have a deadline for today. They write me. I just couldn't do it. It was just a bad week. I just had so many issues and I couldn't. And I believe them. I mean, they're not making it up. But that's you know, you can't expect me to have produced something. It won't be my best. It won't be very good. And rather than deal with the fear. And the anxiety, very often we succumb to the fear and the anxiety, like we don't have any control over it. But that fear and anxiety was learned. And if it was, I learned to be afraid of poverty. I grew up in that. Therefore, my parents drilled into my mind, you're going to school. You're going to get an education so you won't have to, quote unquote, work for a living. You won't have to be, you know, you won't have to labor with your hands. You will labor with your mind. Man, I bought into that. And then I had to unbuy into it, that my education was not my provider. God was my provider. And, I was assuming a role in my life that only my master could fulfill. Now, you know, I have to work, and I think I do, and I love the work that I do. But I had to unlearn the fear. But yeah, I think it's. I would go so far as to say some, and it's not all, but there are some sicknesses that people hold on to that become their line of defense. You cannot expect me to do that because of this. And I'm, you know, and again, that could be that could cause people to look at folks, you know, and you're not really sick. But in my coaching experience, I have had to point out to some people, you know, you always have a headache. Now, have you had this checked out? And they have actually found that their headache shows up when they have to create something, when they have a deadline. And it's their body almost trying to get, I'll get you out of this. Wait here.
Wow.
I'll take care of it. And now there's legitimate, you know, I'm not saying that's across the board. But, you know, in this Eric Mizell I mentioned in his book, he talks about the depression of creative people. The depression of it, which is really a fear of what I've produced is no good. And what I did produce, I can't produce again. And people are lying to me. It's just, it's not really that good. And I am no good. And I can't create. And I'm in this black hole. So when I dealt with my fear, Bill, I have never had writer's block in 20 years, 25 years. Mm. Never. Never. Mm. It's because I'm not afraid. And okay, I'm going to write this out. I think this is garbage. I think it is so elementary. I'm embarrassed to put it out. I put it out, and I get a great response. And then there's other stuff I think is just so profound. I am sizzling, baby. this is my finest work, and people, it's like they don't even see it.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you just have to be delivered from that.
Do you think, though, that some of that may be the fact that that it's so good because it touches you and that it was for you?
Yeah.
You know, and that in the creative process, we stumble across stuff that, you know, that is revelatory to us, but it is just for us. So we put it out there, and maybe, like you said, it's not the, you know, it's not the icing on the cake, but it's, you know, but it's the you know, icing in the cake that's for other people. But, you know, it's the way the cake's decorated for us. You know, I mean,
well,
I think
no question. And I think, you know, it's God had to deliver me from being the judge of my creativity. That's why, I mean, I read this silly little ditty, this little statement years ago. It said, treat all your ideas as royalty because one of them may be king. Hmm. And so I shared the other day that I believe God maybe it's just indigestion, but I think one day I'll have a really best-selling book. But I don't know what, I can't judge which one that book is. So I have to write the books that are on my mind and put them out there. And maybe they're bestsellers after I'm gone. Maybe there's a definition for bestseller I'm not even thinking of, you know. And so my point is, my fear could cause me to prejudge my creativity. Oh, I can't put that out there. That's too elementary, or that's too raw, or that's too unpolished. No, those are all fear statements. And what I have to do is put them out there, give God something to use, and when he breathes on them, because it's so funny, Bill, when something you don't think is very good takes on a life and people really love it, you almost want to dismiss it. You almost want to apologize. You almost want to take it out of their hands or tell them that you're crazy for liking it as much as you do. And that's wrong. I have to learn to say, I am so glad it blessed you. And if you keep reading, or if you keep reading, I'll keep writing, and we'll trust that God will allow me to impact you again sometime, and just be happy that it did bless them, even though I didn't think it was it was my best work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was whenever you were talking about the fear becoming our friend and stuff. Don Norai, who established Destiny Image Publishing, he and I were good friends, and he does this great teaching on, not that I'm bringing in other authors, but you brought in secular authors, you heathen. He talks about the Israelites and how, you know, they were in bondage, obviously, to the Egyptians, and then whenever they got out of the Egyptians' hands, they were in the wilderness for all those years. And then, obviously, the journey into the Promised Land. And, you know, in the wilderness, you know, their shoes didn't wear out, and, you know, their clothes didn't wear out, and you know, God took care of them. But they weren't living to the fullest of what God had promised for them. And, you know, he was taking care of them, but it wasn't their fullest. For them to enter into the fullness, they had to go into places, and they had to deal with it. They had to fight and battle and take over land that was prepared for them. But there were people there that were, you know, enemies that had to be dispatched. And so I think that, you know, the whole wilderness experience of you know, making friends with things that we're afraid to deal with, you know, I think that certainly comes into play there as well.
No question that, you know, we just, again, we're afraid. They're too big. We were like grasshoppers in their sight. That's a fear statement.
Yeah.
We are not adequate to deal with this. And God, you're being unreasonable. You're asking me to do too much. And I'm a good person. I go to church, and I mean, we and it's true. But if we're really talking about purpose and being productive, then we have to, like you said, it was only Joshua and Caleb that really dealt with their fear. And they were the ones that got to go into the promised land. Everybody else had to wait another generation before we went in. Bill, we've got about 3 minutes.
All right. Well, you know, I mean, it's wonderful to talk about this stuff. I just am challenging you to deal with all your fear stuff. Not that, you know, the way you produce, you know, you're just this huge example that we can't reach that kind of perfection. But I will tell you that if you type something Y-O-U-R whenever it's supposed to be Y-O-U apostrophe R-E, I will be in your face.
Mm-hmm.
I will be in your face because that's just unforgivable. Thanks for having me,
John. I generally will catch that one. I have some other ones, though, you know, when I go through my Monday memos and things that I traditionally overlook. But this week, in that show, I misspelled leadership and officials. So I said, oh, how could I misspell leadership? You know, that's the thing we talk about.
Yeah.
Bill, I want to say, as I did the last time, you know, over the years, Robert Greenleaf talks, the father of servant leadership material, talks about every what he calls prophetic voice needs an audience, because the audience draws out from the prophetic voice what it is that they have to say. And he's not using prophetic in a church term. He's using it more in a term that somebody has ideas or they have concepts. And you know, over the years, you have really been a faithful audience for me. You have challenged me when I have done, I've done the you're versus the you are. And you sent me a picture today of how I look, you know, on my Facebook Live, and so, and that I need to adjust the ceiling and that I have in the picture, which I'm working on if I can figure out this crazy tripod. But you've been a faithful friend, and again, just by the nature, we did not go over the questions today. For you to raise the questions about the spider web and stuff, that's because you've listened and you've given me feedback, and that's meant a lot to me. So thank you, brother. I appreciate it.
Yeah. My pleasure, John. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Yeah,
and you know, you've infected me enough now that I'm infecting my wife, and she's starting to say things. Well, she's trying to say things like you, but you know, trying to hit it hard and wish it well, and it just is coming out with, you know, just not that right phrasing. But we're
It's close enough for church work, so we'll take it.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Well, it's an honor, and it is all about influence. And you know, I wrote that article today about ethos, and of course, you were a student in the master's program that I was in as well. So you did a great job there, Bill. I'm going to let you go, and I'm going to sign off. We'll do this again in a couple of weeks if you're open. And thanks for all your support.
All right, man.
We'll talk to you soon.
Later.
All right. Bye bye. Bye bye. All right, that wraps up, for me, I like talk formats. Then you can listen in on our conversation, and rather than me just teaching, although there may be times in the future where I will do that if I don't have a guest. But right now, the guests just keep on flowing. And so I'll be back with you on Monday. Kim McCarthy, who's a Samaritan's Purse volunteer who just got back from Italy. Dr. Rhonda Johnson on Tuesday, Allegheny Health Network, and very involved in this pandemic crisis. Wednesday, Charlene Dominick, author of 3 books through Urban Press, who is launching a ministry in May that we want to hear all about. Thursday, Doug Sprague, author of Go, and my good friend who's going to talk about what's going on in his life. And in the meantime, this is John Stanko signing off for another week. You enjoy the weekend. Be mindful of our partners in Kenya and of any relationships you have in other countries. Be praying for them. Do what you can to support them. And while you're at it, be about the work of waking up to the power of purpose in your life. Until we're together again, this is John Stanko signing off. So long for now.
Thanks again for listening to Wake Up to Purpose with John Stanko. To get in touch with John, you can go to www.purposequest.com or write him at johnstanko@gmail.com.